I will call the meeting to order for the Environment Natural Resources Committee for March 13, 2007. First thing, if members had a chance to review the minutes from the last meeting, Representative Olin moves that we accept the minutes for the meeting of March 12. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. First bill up today, we're going to be hearing from Representative Junkie on House File 593. Just to let you know, we are going to be taking up the wetlands bills today as well, and that we are going to be recessing before looking at the bill that Representative Hansen will be bringing forward, just so you're aware of that. But we'll hear Representative Junkie's bill first. So, Representative Junkie, I will move House File 593 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. And Representative Junkie to the bill.
Mr. Chair, there's an amendment I'd like to add. First two and a half to change it slightly. So if you have the A1 amendment.
Representative, I will move the H0593A1 amendment.
And members, if you would change the A1 amendment as follows. On line 1.4, it should read this way. Page 1, line 12, so 12 instead of 13, before the comma, so cross out period, put comma, insert, cross off that new language there, and then put this in. As posted by the landowner. So the line will read page 1, line 12, before the comma, insert, as posted by the landowner. So if you can incorporate that, Mr. Chair, into your motion, I'd appreciate it.
I will incorporate that into the amendment. And any further
comments? If you want to put it on, then I think I can explain the entire bill. See, this is an author's amendment. To get it in shape, I'd like to have it in there.
And do I have to take a vote on that? I'm incorporate it. I move it. Yeah. So it's been incorporated. Go ahead and to the amendment. Okay, we will, pass the amendment here. Again, I will renew the motion that amendment 0593A1 be passed. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
All right.
Representative Junkie.
Mr. Chair, as quickly as possible, this is a fairly simple bill, and there's a story behind it, and I think it's appropriate. I've worked with the DNR on this, and in fact, we're sending it over, hopefully for inclusion, in Representative Hansen's wetland bill that will be coming through through the Environment Committee. This summer, I had opportunity to take a tour of our fish and wildlife, federal fish and wildlife projects, wetland restoration projects in northern Candiota County. And as we toured, and they're all quite nice, 5, 10, 15, 20-acre restorations, I said, gee, this is great. This is what our duck hunters, this is what everyone's looking for. This is, you know, restoring wetland for wildlife. It's too bad we can't do more of these. I suppose you're limited by funding. They said, actually, no. We could do as many as people want to do in a year. We have plenty of funds. We're not utilizing them all. I said, well, I find that hard to believe since, you know, down at the legislature in St. Paul, we're looking for money for wetland restoration. Well, what is the problem? Well, one of the concerns, and it's a growing concern, and it's addressed in this bill, is this. Farmers, mainly farmers, as they decide to restore a 5 or 10 acre wetland out in on their property, have started realizing that when and if that wetland restoration adjoins a public right-of-way, a highway, a state park, a county park, you name it, anything that's a public right-of-way or public lands, come duck hunting season, for example, Farmer Joe just restored his 10-acre wetland behind his barn. It adjoins the county road. And, early in the morning, during duck season, all of a sudden there's some shooting going on behind the barn, and Farmer Joe realizes, goes out and asks the person to please leave his land, and the person explains, "Sir, I'm on public waters, and I have the right to be here, and I accessed it with my canoe over there on the highway right-of-way." And so at that point, Farmer Joe now is very angry that he wasn't aware that he just set up a public waters access next to his farmstead or somewhere else. And so what this bill does, members, is simply ask that on restoration projects that adjoin public right-of-way, this does not count for any other restorations. If it's you have a 40-acre piece and you restored 5 acres in the middle of that surrounded by private land on all sides, this does not pertain to that whatsoever. You still need permission to get to and utilize those waters. But where it adjoins public right-of-ways, we are basically asking that those lands remain private unless the landowner deems to the DNR or Fish and Wildlife that they are available for public use. And there are cases where people are restoring lands for public use and they have no problem with that. But the fact is, out in the community now, people are busy telling their neighbors not to restore wetlands. And I think as a environmental folks out here and the DNR and all of us around these tables seek to restore more wetlands for the wildlife and sporting communities, particularly for habitat, this is deterring at this point some of those restorations, at least out in west central Minnesota in my area. So we're asking for that. Again, the question in this amendment asks, well, how would someone know if it's a restoration project and it's not open to the public? This amendment simply allows a posting of that restoration that was completed, just like you would post other private land for hunting purposes. So again, it really gives the landowner the option of what to do with that restoration once it's done and adjoins a public right-of-way. That is the bill. That is the story. And again, talking with DNR and others, we think, and Bowser, we think this addresses that problem and hopefully allows more monies to go out there and restore future wetlands in a way that we can utilize some of those dollars that tend to be available.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. And Representative Cornish has a question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, let me run a scenario by you first and then see if this applies, because I'm a little bit confused. But for scores of years, you've always been able to come up to a lake and drop a canoe in if the water met the ditch or off the end of a culvert, and there's tons of caseload of court cases going all the way to the Supreme Court about water laws, and public has been able to access and literally hundreds of lakes through Minnesota. I used to run across this probably 5 times during a season. And what I'm worried about this is this completely turning over the system. And I could see if he creates a public water or creates a wetland, or you're talking about a pond, but I'm wondering if you've got a popular duck hunting lake that people, there's no public access in a lot of these lakes, and the only access the hunters have is off the road or the culvert where the water meets. If this could be construed, if a landowner does restoration in any part of a lake and a road abuts that lake, could they shut that lake off just because there's a restoration project, or how would that work? Because right now, I would think that this would really be alarming to duck hunters, because we're talking about all these places they access the ponds and things from. Just explain that a little bit to me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cornish, the intent of this bill, and I think the way it's written, and particularly with the amendment, it's only for those brand new creations or restorations. In other words, there's nothing there today. So it's only for brand new restorations or creations. We're plugging the tile, creating a 5-acre wetland in a place, maybe there was a wetland 100 years ago, but it's farmland for the most part today. There's not any wetlands there. These are created or restored at 100%. So it's not for anything existing wetland at this point in time. That's my intent. It doesn't affect any of the existing waters or wetlands, in fact, not waters, wetlands. As you see, we took out public waters because we're not concerned with the public waters, Representative
Cornish, and maybe that's addressing it. DNR suggested we take out the language of public waters and talk only about creation or restoration of wetlands, which I think addresses what you're talking about. Once we take the public waters out, it doesn't pertain to those statutes. It's only brand new restorations that we're concerned about.
Okay. Any further questions? Representative Osmond?
Where does the bill go from here?
Representative Osmond, it's my intention to, again, consulting with the department, they thought it might go over to finance, where Representative Hansen's bill is going to be apparently assembled. He's got a wetlands bill he's working with DNR on, and they suggest that we put that into their bill over there. So it's headed to finance, and ultimately Representative Wagenius's committee, where they'll be putting that bill together.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Osmond.
In that case, I'll raise my question now, because I'm looking at line 1.11 at the end of the line where it says public road right away. It's consistent with the previous or existing language, but I'm wondering why the word road is in there. Just be public right away. It'd be much broader. But
That's a good question, Representative Osmond.
I'd raise that.
I'm not sure if council sitting at the table today can tell us. Again, we've worked on this for a number of months to get this language, and had a couple redrafts.
Mr. Chair, Representative Duncan, you just might want to think about it, and you have other stops you're making.
Yep.
That was my concern.
I'll double-check that, Representative Osmond. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, Representative Duncan, just if it's possible, if you could consult with the DNR in the next stop and just... it's probably going to pass anyway, but just for my concern, I'm just concerned about if we could delineate, create a new, somehow make sure, because restoration projects, I think, can occur in existing wetlands, too, and so if we could, some comfortability language there is what I was worried about. Right now, we're getting the complaints every year about farmers, which I'm one, about creating our own when we do the CRP and then people can't hunt it, and I can just see the complaints that are going to come of this. And so,
and again, Mr. Chair, Representative Cornish, it's not my intent to do anything with existing wetlands at all or restorations of existing wetlands where people have already had access, and I'll ask our staff, our fine research staff, to make sure that's clear in there along with the DNR before we get to finance committee, and I'll also ask them to help me out with the road work and make sure that's necessary or not.
Okay. Any further questions at all? Seeing none, I will renew the motion that House File 593, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee.
Thank you. Next, we have Representative Osmond. You'd like to move your bill for discussion?
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to move House File 1935.
Representative Osmond moves House File 1935.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill makes a number of changes to the Wetland Conservation Act, and I have someone from has the expertise to explain the details on the bill, and I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Warrens to explain the bill.
Thank you for joining us, Mr. Warrens. If you could state your name for the tape, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is David Warrens with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. What I'd like to do first, Mr. Chair, is just briefly provide some background on the bill before we jump right into just a quick run-through of the specific provision of the bill so the committee is aware of what it is in the bill. I think a couple of points are important to bear in mind. The 15 years since, or 6 years since, the Weather Conservation Act was enacted, there are probably a few statutes that have been the subject of more attention by the legislature than the Wetland Conservation Act. There have only been 3 years in that, in those 16 years where legislation has not been introduced, and 10 of those 16 years legislation has been enacted and signed into law by the governor. This is a very frequent occurrence, and it highlights the importance that wetlands place to Minnesotans, and the fact that we need to continue to take a look at our policy and how are we protecting the wetlands that exist within the state of Minnesota. The Board of Water and Soil Resources and our responsibility to provide oversight for the administration of the Wetland Conservation Act. Every 2 or 3 years, we develop a report where we try and gather and present all the relevant state and federal program data as they relate to wetlands. The most recent report we completed was a couple of years 01 through 03 and was issued in August of 2005. In that report, we did document some significant achievements by local governments that administer the Wetland Conservation Act. In particular, we identified that over 10,000 acres of potential impacts were avoided through the local governments and their action of working with landowners through the course of the law. However, I think there is some other data in there that has drawn some other attention that speaks to other facets of the law. In particular, if you look at the overall function of the Wetland Conservation Act, the amount of regulated impacts and part replacement in all years exceeds the amount of replacement always exceeds the impacts. However, there are a class of activities that are exempt under the law, meaning they are not regulated and replacement is not required for those activities. Over those 3 years, the data reported to Bowers by local governments indicated that approximately 450 acres of wetlands on an annual basis are not replaced, leading to a net loss on the Wetland Conservation Act. One of the key concepts of the Wetland Conservation Act is both in statute, the policy of no net loss of wetlands. Obviously, the data we provide indicate that the Wetland Conservation Act is not meeting that policy of no net loss. It was due to this report and the data that we presented in that led Governor Pawlenty to direct the Clean Water Cabinet to undertake an assessment of the Wetland Conservation Act with the primary goal of doing more to limit the loss of wetlands through the regulatory mechanisms of the Wetland Conservation Act. I think it's important to emphasize the concept of limiting the loss. During the course of the work that I briefly described, the goal was not to get the Wetland Conservation Act to achieving a no net loss, but the way I characterize it is to narrow the gap we've identified between wetlands that are impacted and between those that are replaced under the regulatory requirements of the law. Under the direction of this directive by Governor Pawlenty, the Board of Water and Soil Resources undertook a year-long assessment process that included over 35 different stakeholder organizations that ran the entire breadth of state, federal, local government, environment, conservation, business groups, on down the line of all groups that have an interest in wetlands were invited to participate in this process over the past year. This process culminated February 21 of this year with the Clean Water Cabinet formally accepting and receiving the report that allowed us to move forward with legislation that you are here to consider this evening. Now what I'd like to do is draw your attention to House File 1935 and do a quick run-through of the provisions of the bill in terms of what they will do to the landscape. Section 1, and if you look through the bill, deals with the actual new language on page 2. What this is doing is it is amending statute to alter an existing rule requirement that requires a deed restriction on land that has been drained under the agriculture and drainage exemptions. The purpose of the deed restriction is to ensure that when those exemptions are applied, where land's being drained for an agricultural purpose, it's not being done for ag 1 year and paramount converted to a non-ag use in a subsequent year. The purpose of the deed restriction is to notify future landowners that they may not convert that land for a period of 10 years to a non-ag use without replacing the wetlands that have been impacted under the exempt activity. This is one of the provisions that we have throughout the bill where our goal is to protect the integrity of the exemptions, where they're intended to provide a particular benefit, to try and maintain that benefit and be as specific about it as we can. Section 2 makes some changes to wetland replacement siting provisions of the law. As a general policy, the Wetland Conservation Act requires the replacement wetlands to be as close as to the impact site as possible to make sure that the wetland function values are being replaced close to that particular site. What we are doing with these changes are fundamentally two things. The first one is institute a new concept in wet replacement, that being bank service areas, And what those are fundamentally areas that conform to the 10 major watershed areas of the state of Minnesota to make wetland banking a more flexible opportunity for replacement throughout the state. The other thing it's doing, too, is increasing the flexibility of wetland replacement in the greater than 80% part of the state, which is principally the northeastern third of the state that have a lot of their existing wetlands still in place. Section 3 is where we start to move into some of the exemptions under the agriculture activity exemption. The changes that we are proposing to do for this exemption is to delete most of the exemption and to replace it with an exemption for normal farming practices. What this will do is greatly simplify the application of the current exemption that right now makes reference to wetland type as well as to connection to the federal farm program. Our experience has been that the existing exemption is very confusing and difficult to apply on the ground, leads to a lot of a waste of time, and fundamentally puts farmers somewhat at risk when they're operating out there. The goal here is to let farmers know in very clear terms that if you're undertaking normal farming practice as defined here, the Wetland Conservation Act will not infringe upon your agricultural activities. The changes to the grain exemption really need to be taken in, at least a key one, in context with the agriculture activities exemption. In particular, the one piece I will find note to is some new language, which is found on page 8 of the bill, on page 9 of the bill, where what we are doing is we are reinserting some of the language that's being deleted out of the agricultural activities exemption to the point that that if a wetland area has been cropped in 8 out of 10 years, that the replacement requirements of the Wetland Conservation Act will not apply to that particular activity. Again, the point being that if a wetland is being cropped in a clear majority of years, it seems appropriate to allow the farmer to continue to operate in the area, to apply drainage, if that is their case. Part of why we're doing this is to, again, the term I apply to some of these changes is regulatory practicality and making sure that we're not too much increasing the scope of work by local units of government who really carry most of the workload of the Wetland Conservation Act. This is a way to help moderate some of those workload increases that are contained within this bill. Section 5 deals with the federal approvals exemption, which principally provides exemptions under state law to the extent activity is really under the Clean Water Act, administered by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The proposal here is to delete two obsolete provisions of that exemption. Section 6, dealing with the utilities public works exemption, is completely a rewrite and simplification of the exemption. There should be no change in the application of the exemption on the ground through the changes you see there. Section 7 deals with the de minimis exemption. What this allows for is an amount of impact that can occur without replacement regardless of activity. It is a fairly complicated exemption, but principally what the proposal in House File 1935 is proposing to do is to reduce the exempt amounts in the southern two-thirds of the state, the less than 80% area, from 5,000 square feet to 2,500 square feet. In the less than 50% area, which is that far southern, the principal agriculture area as well as the river valley, from 2,000 to 1,000 square feet. And then further to reduce the de minimis within the shoreland area, within the shoreland setback area, that would be the area from the ordinary high water mark to the building setback, which is determined by local ordinance, down to fundamentally zero. We also provide for that a 40 square foot, and this is one of those provisions that we throw in the context of regulatory practicality to ensure that local governments are not out there, are people who are planting trees or digging post holes in that shoreland zone. Make sure we have some realistic expectations under this exemption. These are changes that we believe will have a positive benefit on no-net loss, that reduce that gap that we identified, I talked about earlier in my remarks. The next change dealing on Section 8 will delete some obsolete language regarding a study that Bowser completed a number of years ago, and to just incorporate language that recognizes some current activity of the Board of Water and Soil Resources. We work with the University of Minnesota on a wetland delineator certification program to allow us to continue on that work as we currently have been. Section 9, principally, provide some time for local appeals to be considered at the local level. The concern we have is that there's currently an opportunity within law, if a local government is complying with Minnesota Statutes 15.99, otherwise known as 60-day rule, there is the possibility where an applicant could appeal a local decision on the last day of that period of time, meaning that a local appeal could not be conducted within that time period, resulting in a default approval. All we're doing here is suggesting that it needs to be a minimum period of time that allows local government to conduct an appeal process with all due diligence and not be forced into a very short time frame to make a decision, or in a worst case scenario, for an applicant to use the process to result in a default approval of a decision. Section 10 deals with fees for appeals to the Board of Water and Soil Resources. What we are doing is instituting or proposing to authorize the board to establish a fee schedule for appeals that are made to the Board of Water and Soil Resources for authorized activities within the statute. Section 11 is a conforming amendment that's necessary due to changes in Section 1 that deals with the deed restriction. Section 12 would have fees, the fee revenue that's generated by appeals and wetland banking to be paid directly to Bowser for those appropriate purposes. Section 13 is again a conforming amendment that's necessary due to the changes in the agricultural activities exemption. Section 14 would provide Bowser with exempt rulemaking authority such that within 60 days from the date of enactment, we have to present draft rules to the House and Senate Environment Committees, as well as publish notice within the State Register, and that 90 days after enactment, those exempt rules would go into effect, and then would be in effect for a two-year period of time, which would mean we'd have to promptly turn around and develop work on the current rules to get those done in time before the deadline. Section 15 are the governor's budget recommendations for wetland conservation activities to the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Section 16 is proposing to repeal the approved development exemption. What this exemption provides for is essentially for development of projects approved within the 5 years prior to 1991 could be exempt from the Wetland Conservation Act. This is, in our view, an obsolete provision. All such projects should have long been completed, making this, an obsolete provision that can be deleted from statute. And Section 17 provides for an effective date of the day following final enactment. Mr. Chair, thanks for the opportunity. Happy to respond to any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Werns and Representative Osment. Any questions or discussion? Seeing none, I will at this point lay House File 1935 on the table, and we will pick up with Representative Hansen's House File 1343.
Thanks very much. Chair, it was a tough job. Somebody had to.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, if you'd like to move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'd like to move House File 1343.
Representative Hansen moves House File 1343. Representative Hansen.
Before I go through the bill, I believe that we just received a delete all amendment. If staff could hand that out.
I believe that's everybody has a copy of the delete all. Okay. So the delete all amendment will be handed out. And Representative Hansen,
I'd like to move the delete all. That would be, this is the first stop of this bill. And I'd like to move the delete all to get the bill into the shape that I would like it to be in.
Representative Hansen moves the delete all amendment A070300. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion for Dale's bill is amended. And
Representative Hansen. Chair Eakin and members of the committee, because this is a fairly substantial delete all, I would like to take a recess for not only the members of the committee to look through it, but also all the folks in the audience. So if you could move a 20-minute recess.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. I will move. We'll go 20, maybe 30 minutes
okay.
On this. So, so until, I guess, we'll be coming back probably about a quarter after. We'll now be reconvening. We do have a quorum, and I would like to bring us back again to Representative Hansen's bill. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple of, I don't know if you want to take those now or what's your intent.
Yes, I think we'll do the amendments now.
Okay, I'd like to move to the delete all a couple of oral amendments. Mr. Helland and I have talked about this on lines 1.18, 1.19, and 1.20. There are the words grants or. Grants or and grants or, those would be deleted.
Okay. Representative Hansen moves the oral amendment. And could you give us those lines again to remove grants or from
1.18, 1.19, and 1.20?
Okay. 1.18, 1.19, and 1.20. Thank you.
Mr. Gatt, you could. Folks would like to comment on that. It just cleans up the bill to make it easier on administering.
Okay, thank you. Any questions on it or discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hansen renews his motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. And Representative Hansen.
And then we have an amendment, but Representative Wagenius took my copy, so I don't get out of it. I think staff are here. It's amendment H134A1. And this deals with, and I hope that staff would have it out on the table as well. This deals with a section in the bill relating to citizen enforcement.
I believe that was page 18, was it? Page 18, line 1829 through line 19.19.
Correct.
On page 19.
Mr. Helen, is this drafted correctly to delete that and.
No. Mr. Chair, I wasn't told to delete a existing amendment and to delete everything for an existing section for this. But this, if the committee passes the penalty orders authority here, it would fall on page 3 after line 4 in the delete everything amendment. And then if you want to strike section 17, that's not part of this. I'm sorry, I wasn't told to do that.
Okay. What I would then, Mr. Chair, I would move to strike section 17, lines 18.27 to
19.19. Okay. Representative Hansen moves to strike lines 18.29 to line 19.19.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Dale.
Does that need to include starting at 18.27 so it says
Minnesota Statute 2006 is amending by adding a subdivision to read semicolon.
That is correct.
We'd have to start on line 8, actually section 17. I think that deletes section 17 in its entirety.
Okay, and we'll incorporate that if Representative Hansen chooses.
I believe this is a section of the delete all that there's a lot of concern about, and I think it's good to remove this. And so I'd encourage folks to support the amendment.
Okay. Any discussion on that? Seeing none, Representative Hansen renews his motion. And all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is passed. And now to the other amendment.
Now I would move the H1343A1 amendment.
Any discussion to this amendment? Seeing none, Representative Hansen renews his motion to pass the H1343A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. And Representative Hansen to the bill as amended.
Bill as amended, I would ask Jeanette Rimmer from Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy to walk us through the bill as amended.
Welcome, Ms. Bremer. You state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jeanette Rimmer. I'm the legal director with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. We've been working very hard with Representative Hansen and a lot of other members, as well as interested parties on this. I think I've been eating, sleeping, and breathing wetlands for the last few days, much less previous to that. What we have here with the delete all is the work of the last several days and weeks working between our organization, MCEA, works a lot on wetlands. I think we've even seen some of you in presenting a wetland report earlier this session in Representative Wagenius's committee regarding our concerns about the Wetland Conservation Act. We were a participant in the stakeholder group that Bowser had going all throughout the summer at the direction of the governor. We participated in the roundtable in St. Cloud. And so we've really been working a lot on these issues. Over the last couple of days, as I said, we've been working with Bowser to look at their bill and Representative Hansen's bill and try to sort of bring them together with some agreement. We have been working with agricultural groups. We've been talking to developers. We have been talking to local government. So I'm hoping that we are covering the bases. So starting with Section 1 of the bill that is before you, one of the concerns that has been raised is with what is commonly referred to as the 60-day rule. Minnesota Statute Section 15.99 imposes a deadline on local government decision makers to not basically sit on decisions too long. And there has been some concern that certain decisions relative to wetlands and certain applications and permits can't be made in 60 days because they are too technical. For example, a wetland delineation requires there to be some scientific and technical examination on the ground or approvals of replacement plans. And so this section of the bill gives local government more time to do that, the time necessary to do the technical work, but then still leaves the 60 days in place. As long as the technical work gets done, then the 60-day clock still runs. The next section is, here we go, section 3, let's see, subdivision 3, there we go, thank you. This is something that was in the original Representative Osment and Bowser bill. This is some deed restriction language that Bowser feels is necessary to make sure that it preserves the integrity of the agricultural exemption, which is, of course, important to everyone. If someone is using the agricultural exemption, you don't want someone else to be able to come in and take advantage of that. And as Mr. Wyron talked about, preserving the integrity of exemptions is very important. There is also some concerns about using stormwater ponds that are truly just water quality treatment ponds for wetland credit. Instead, we make sure that it's got to really be a wetland and functioning like a wetland, and that's at Bowser's discretion. Moving on, Section 4, wetland replacement siting. This is something that is of concern to some of the northern counties that still have a lot of their wetlands. We have all been participating in a group with respect to identifying where there are restoration siting opportunities and impacts that might have on wetland replacement. And this acknowledges those limitations that there are in those counties where there are still a lot of wetlands and allows some flexibility and latitude there. It also encourages the creation of a wetland inventory for those so that we can better identify those restoration opportunities. Section 5 is a rewrite, as Mr. Wyron's indicated, of the agricultural exemption. The language between the two bills was very, very similar in that regard. And what this does is cleans up a lot of language that was dependent on federal programs that no longer exist, and now just fairly simply states normal farming activities, and those are identified, are exempt from the wetland replacement requirements. But it does reference that draining and filling have to be dealt with elsewhere. So in other words, it does not cover draining and filling of wetlands. To make sure I get the right section, Section 6, we are talking about drainage. This is the provision that Mr. Wyron's also addressed, the farmed 8 of 10 years. And if it has been farmed 8 of 10 years, it is exempt from the reach of the Wetland Act, really a companion to some of that agricultural exemption language. Section 7, this is the federal approval section. If there is already a permit approved by the federal government under their applicable wetland requirements, then we do not need a duplication of effort under state law, and that just cleans it up and simplifies it. Section 8, Utilities and Public Works, again, as Mr. Wyron's indicated, this came out of the stakeholder process, and this, too, cleans up and simplifies the existing exemption for utilities and public works. It does not change how those work on the landscape. It just makes the statutory language more clear. De minimis, Section 9. This is an exemption for certain small impacts to wetlands, and you will see it is geared differently to different parts of the state. There is an exemption for small wetland impacts. There was a lot of discussion of this exemption, both before the stakeholder group, during the stakeholder group, at the round table, and it was the Bowser Wetland Committee's recommendation. And while we would have maybe liked to see something even more aggressive, we ultimately agreed that this was a good approach to cut some of these in half. You will notice they did not take that action for the northern part of the state that does still have a lot of wetlands left. There is special attention paid to those parts of the state that are already in a situation where they've lost a lot of their wetlands. Also, the shoreland zone, the narrow strip of the building setback zone in shorelands, which those wetlands play an important water quality function, those get some special attention here. Let's see, exemption conditions. There's been a lot of discussion. I think Representative Hansen's bill originally had some provisions with respect to exemption reporting. There was some discussion of forestry. This really goes to, again, maintaining the integrity of the exemptions and allowing Bowser and citizens, as well as the legislature, to understand what is happening on the landscape with the Wetland Conservation Act. In the discussions, it became clear that some of this is very, very detailed and perhaps not the best place in statute. And so Bowser has said that they would like to take some of these issues up in rulemaking as they think that they are important as well. They would like to know more about how exemptions are used. And so there is a commitment to do this in rulemaking, and I think a lot of the interested groups would prefer to see it that way. So we hope to have a spirited rulemaking discussion. Finally, let's see, we're up to Section 12. These are some provisions that were in the original Representative Osment bill for Bowser. These are a number of administrative provisions. Bowser has identified the need to make sure that appeals can timely happen, that they have some fee structure as they are finding that they are having an increased workload. and they need to be able to recover some of their costs for that and hope that they will cut down on some frivolous appeals. And so these are really some administrative provisions that will help Bowser do their job and do their job well. Section 15 is fees, and I think that's self-explanatory. Section 17 has been deleted. Section 18 is some rulemaking that Mr. Wyron talked about, and Section 19 appropriations that he also discussed.
Thank you, Ms. Demers.
Thank you.
Any questions or discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hansen,
Mr. Dashke, an opportunity. And I just want to compliment Mr. Dashke for working on these. The leadership shown was Representative Osmond on the bill, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and all the stakeholders who participated in the process. And the last few days, there's been a lot of effort trying to find common ground, and I want to note John's effort in that and give him the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Jaskey. State your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm John Jaskey, Executive Director of the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Representative Hansen noted, you know, we put together a bill that the agency based its contents on the process that we used over the last year to try and generate some consensus towards moving in the direction of getting closer to no net loss, as well as developing some administrative efficiencies. And we believe that the bill we put together does that. We understand that the bill that has now been amended, that Representative Hansen is carrying, contains much of that same provisions, and we were happy to see that. The recent amendment, we'll have to probably spend a little bit more time on. We haven't had a chance to look at that in any depth, the administrative penalty order amendment. So look forward to looking at that more carefully and letting you know what comments we might have.
Okay. Thank you, Director Jaskey. Any questions for the director or comments? Okay, seeing none, next we do have Mr. Todd Beckel. Is Mr. Beckel here? And we are trying to, okay. Mr. Beckel, and we will try to keep testimony to about 4 or 5 minutes, so. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Beckel. If you could state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Todd Beckel, Lake Louise County Commissioner. I'm here to speak for Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, Association of Minnesota Counties, Northern County Land Use Coordinating Board, but mainly I'm here to speak for Lake of the Woods County and Cooch County. As a commissioner in that area, we represent 20% of the wetlands we're talking about today. And it's a general feeling that you're trying to make northern Minnesota pay for the sins of the rest of the state over the past 20 years of all the draining and everything else. It's hard for us to maintain a county with all the restrictions. So we really can't support any change to the WACA that's brought forward today without... We need an assessment of all our wetlands in the state of Minnesota, where we have gains, where we have losses. The main issues we're talking today are regulatory wetlands and where we have the losses. But there is gains. If you talk to the rest of the people, there's up to 15,000 or more a year. It's just so restrictive. You know, we're still trying. We want people in our area to be able to have a home. And if you start talking 10,000 square feet, it's almost impossible to get a home in. You can put in a driveway and a trailer. That's really not good business for a county that's what we're supporting. If you know, in Lake of the Woods County, we only have 13% upland. We have to come up with a value system on our wetlands. They're not all created equal. Sorry for my rambling. It's just not a full scope of the whole picture. We need to just take a step back, bring all the people together again, and come up with a plan that we can all live with, that balances out northern Minnesota and southern Minnesota and puts values. So we really can have a good program that we can all support. And that's pretty much it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Beckel. And you bring up some, I think, legitimate concerns here. What about the provision dealing with the wetlands bank, however? My guess is that there are certain provisions in here that you think would be helpful. Is that correct?
It really would be. I mean, that's part of the inventory. If we do an inventory on the wetlands we have and availability of places to do replacements, and that's part of setting the values. If we set values of where, or should say, high priority areas in the state for replacement, and then there'll be more buy-in. If the Bowser would identify them areas, there'd be more buy-in for replacing outside the areas. We all know there's more important areas to replace wetlands. Replacing in Lake of the Woods and Beltrami and Lake of Pooch, it doesn't make much sense all the time, but it is the cheapest place to do it for us. It still doesn't make good sense when I'm spending public money on projects. I have a hard time spending the money on the project when all I'm doing is protecting water quality that's going to flow into Canada less than a day later. That's not a wise choice for the state of Minnesota, in my opinion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Beckel. Any questions for the commissioner? Okay, seeing none, thank you again. And we have next on the list Mr. Douglas Fisher. Welcome, Mr. Fisher. If you could state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Doug Fisher. I'm the Anoka County Highway Engineer. There is a handout that is going around, and again, with the delete all bill, I'll probably just put that aside, just kind of hit some of the high points. Today I am representing, besides Anoka County, I am representing the Minnesota County Engineers Association, MICA, the Minnesota Intercounty Agents Association, and AMC, the Association of Minnesota Counties. I'm representing them. I was a member of the task force, the assessment task force that started meeting last January and wrapped up with the stakeholders meeting in St. Cloud in November. Just a couple points. In the assessment or stakeholders process, I think there was one thing and one thing only that we had unanimous support on, and that was that we all did not have confidence in the data. We're not saying it was right. We're not saying it was wrong. We just said we just didn't feel that we had a high degree of confidence in that. Right now, you might have heard in committee or through the agencies that the DNR is going to undertake the comprehensive wetland mapping program, and our agencies, our associations, would like to see that wetland mapping assessment take place so that we have data that we can all point to and say, now this is the data. And our agency is essentially saying to make statutory changes now is premature. There are some things that in the stakeholder process that we did agree with, but also there were things that we didn't agree with. But essentially we're saying some of this activity is premature. I'd say on the major issues, we didn't necessarily achieve consensus on a lot of the major issues. One of the things that was unique at the two-day stakeholders meeting in St. Cloud in November was we were talking about changes in the exemptions, and we assessed what they did and what they affected. And even the professional mediator on the first day kind of called the evening off short, but we reflected on the fact that since the bill was passed originally in 1991, it was revised, as Dave Warrens spoke earlier, it was revised in 93, 96, 98, 2000, 2001, 2002, 3, and 4. The rules were made in 93 and revised in 98, 2000, 2002. Even the mediator said, you know, it may be just so that this thing has been tweaked enough that it is the way it is for a lot of very good reasons. The egg industry in this state is very important. The timber industry is very important. Personal property rights are very important. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that got to where we are right now. And we feel, in a large part, that the Wetland Conservation Act has been a great success. Bowser's data in the last 11 years avoided or minimized the impact of 38,000 acres of wetlands. You know, so we feel when you look at the wetlands in the regulatory non-exempt program, my local road projects, when I impact a wetland, we do have to mitigate for those. The regulated non-exempt activities are creating more wetlands than they're impacting. It's only when you add in the regulated or exempt activities, they say we're losing 400 to 600 acres a year. What we aren't saying, though, that's just wetlands in the regulated process, in the WACA process. What always gets left out is those wetlands created outside the WACA process, outside the regulated process. In the same three-year study period that Bowser always refers to, where we lost 1,200 acres of wetlands, outside the regulated process, in that same three-year period, there were 51,000 acres of wetlands created. So our associations are primarily saying, do we really have a no net loss problem in the state of Minnesota? And we'd say no. Just to wrap up, maybe if you go to the last page of my handout, it's just kind of summary of the specific actions that we are asking for. You know, we always get painted as the anti-environmentalists, the county engineers. You know, I could pull out my sportsman license with my waterfowl stamps and pheasant stamps and stuff. You know, we love the environment. We support it. But we want to create a good balance. We would like to see the DNR's wetland mapping process take place first. We would like to respect and honor the agreements that were made in the past. You know, Mark Twain said, whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting. You know, this is a highly emotional issue for a lot of people. Wetlands, property rights, ag industry, timber industry. This brings up a lot of things, and a lot of agreements have been made where both sides weren't totally happy, but the agreement was made, and the WACA is a success. Some of the things that are still left in this bill that I'd like to point out that I think are still not good, the exemption change to the de minimis. Let me just go into this handout for 1 second on page 7, on the top of page 7. First of all, de minimis is a property rights issue. We know that the legislature feel that it's very important with the sweeping eminent domain legislation that passed last year. So we know property rights are important. I'm an engineer. I look at things from a benefit-cost analysis. If you enact these changes to the de minimis exemption, what we're really talking about is 17 to 23 acres per year that would be affected by this change. But the burden to administer this change would be in the range of $380,000 to $500,000 per year on local governments, LGUs that have to administer this. You know, as an engineer, I look at the cost-benefit ratio of this and say, you know, it's not necessarily getting the bang for the buck that I think we want to achieve. And I think as you look at all the changes to the exemptions that exist, this is the type of analysis that has to be made for you to fully understand, are we going to do this? Our association through the stakeholder process said, you know, instead of spending $1 million on paperwork, administering some of these changes in statute, why don't we take that $1 million, go somewhere where we drained a wetland, restore that wetland, and actually build a wetland? But we were told, no, we can't do that because that's a solution outside the regulatory process. Well, we were frustrated by that. And I want to tell you, I was frustrated by that. So that's something that we feel, if we are going to make changes, we need to broaden the aspects. Now, there are some good things in here with the bank service areas. That does expand where we can do some of that mitigation. But we'd like to expand it further. We heard a commissioner from a northern county. You know, wouldn't it be better to replace a Cooch County wetland impact and Lacapaw County on a waterfowl flyway? You know, those are the type of things that we would hope that we could actually do. Some of the other things in the bill that we still feel are bad, the stormwater or the wetland credit for stormwater ponds, we feel that's bad. We used to build square rectangular bathtubs for stormwater ponds. We don't anymore. We build stormwater ponds. They look like wetlands. They act like wetlands. They function as wetlands. If we don't get credit for them as wetlands, we'll go back to building square bathtubs for stormwater control ponds. We think that's bad. We think that should be changed. I'm very glad to see you deleted the citizen enforcement provision. We thought that was very onerous as well.
wrap it up. We're going to try to keep it to 4 to 5 minutes to testify.
Well, I'll just wrap that up in saying, you know, again, in this legislation, you're identifying over $2 million of funds for these various programs. We would feel if one of the success programs we did with the statutory change in 2003 was the local road wetland replacement program. Huge success. Small itty-bitty impacts that were happening by road authorities, cities and counties, were reported to Bowser. Instead of counties doing 2 acres here, 3 acres there, we reported to Bowser. Bowser goes out and builds a 400-acre wetland complex where it makes sense, where it would be high quality, high value. We're going to spend some money. Can we replicate a program like that? Instead of piecemealing these little exemption changes here and there, we're going to spend money. We think that would be a bigger bang for the buck, and we would urge the committee, Bowser, the agencies to work on a more global strategy like that. We think that would be a much higher value to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Any questions? Seeing none, next we have Ms. Renee Fry. Thank you, Ms. Fry. And state your name for the tape, please.
Thank you very much. My name is Renee Fry, and I'm a city council member from the city of Columbus. And I want to thank the committee for allowing me to speak tonight. It's kind of interesting when you've heard a lot of conversation about stakeholders. I don't see anywhere on the list where the local government units that actually have to implement the changes that are being proposed, the WACA itself. I don't see that any of us were ever invited to these conversations. And I find it somewhat disturbing that the people that probably have the most valuable information in terms of how this thing is working was not part of the process that led to the changes that are being presented to you. Columbus is a relatively unknown community. We are located in the northeast corner of Anoka County. I would suspect that most of you have been to Columbus one or more times in your life but didn't realize it, because we are at the northern confluence of 35E and 35W. The interstate goes right through our community. And that interstate is actually kind of an interesting feature of our community, because we have a number of what are now being called wetlands located on either side of that interstate that's sort of a consequence, not necessarily an intended one, but a consequence of the interstate. Because I think everyone here will agree that if water is contained or found in a particular area long enough, certain vegetation will grow up that gives it the characteristics of a certain type of wetland. But what you'll find is that those are wetlands that are distinctive, they are disjointed, they are not connected to a larger system, they are low quality, they are low functioning. And yet, we are essentially given the responsibility of protecting those wetlands as much as those that are high quality and high functioning. There's a map that's been distributed, and unfortunately I don't believe that I had enough copies for everyone, but I'd like you to take a note of the green, because Columbus is over 65% wetlands. Over a third of our community is already under DNR control through Carlos Avery Wildlife Management Area, the Pool Management Area, Lamprey Pass, and so on. And so I think I can speak with a certain amount of authority that our community has been dealing with wetlands on a daily issue for, well, I've been involved with local government for probably 11, 12 years now. And every meeting, every application that comes before us, wetlands are a very significant component of everything, whether it's a business application, a subdivision, and so on. And contrary to the statistics that have been quoted here, I would basically pose to all of you that in our community, the number of wetlands have been increasing because every proposal that comes before us involves stormwater. It involves wetland impacts and so on. And so as the guardians of WACA, we are making sure that if wetlands are affected or impacted, that they are being mitigated at a rate of 2 to 1. That we have many property owners that voluntarily choose to create more wetlands. You have to understand, Columbus has 5-acre home sites. We value our wetlands. We value our natural resources. That's why we moved there. And so you will find that property owners are voluntarily working to improve wetland quality and functionality voluntarily, not because WACA is out there telling them they have to. And so I think we've done an exemplary job of protecting the resources that we have. And by that math, you'll also see that for us, upland is a very valuable resource. Our trees are a very valuable resource. So we're constantly put in the position of attempting to balance all of the resources that we have in our community. And I think we're taking somewhat of a unique approach to this in the sense that we are currently working on a resource management plan with Rice Creek Watershed, specifically in the freeway area, but our goal is to expand that model to other areas. But we are really looking at wetland function, wetland quality, and coming up with a plan that truly is designed to set aside those high-functioning, those high-quality wetlands that are truly the pearl in our wetland inventory, but also recognizing that the low-quality, low-functioning wetlands are never going to achieve any of the purposes that we would want for them. They're not going to be providing the filtering services that we need of them. They're not going to be providing habitat. So why not balance all of the needs that we have and fill those low-quality, low-functioning, isolated wetlands that are next to an interstate, that are never going to amount to much of anything, and use those wetland acres to then benefit, to improve the wetlands that are in a good place, even within our own community. I mean, we're looking not so much to create a wetland someplace else, but let's look at ways for individual property owners to maximize the developable area, but also to have a very strong incentive to improve, to enhance, to really protect the wetlands that we have out there. And at this point, my community does not support any changes to WACA. We believe that the language that presently exists is working just fine, and in fact has been essentially the foundation for our resource management plan and the other planning efforts that we've undertaken. Frankly, we'd almost like to see a dialogue or a discussion held to really almost take WACA out of the state form, and let's look at it on a more regional basis. Maybe even allow for an opt-out for a community like mine where we're going above and beyond what WACA requires to come up with our own resource management plan, because as the guardians of those resources, I think we're doing a really good job, and we'd like the opportunity to really put our own stamp, our own spin on things. The de minimis exemptions were probably the first thing that jumped off the bill at me, because I have to deal with my constituents on a day-to-day basis. They're your constituents, too. But these are the folks that are going to come to me with that home plan, that home design, or maybe it's a business that wants to build in our community. And frankly, when we're talking about things like being able to put in a driveway, being able to build their home, when you take away those de minimis exemptions, when you force the average homeowner to mitigate at a rate of 2-to-1, or you're telling them they can't put in that driveway, you've now taken away their opportunity, their reasonable use of their property. And as the LGU, they're coming to me when I have to tell them, you can't do that because WACA, as amended in the 2007 legislature, is now going to prevent you from filling a reasonable amount of area to do the things that are the reasonable use of that particular property. I believe that that's a hardship to the property owner, but it's a hardship to the community. For example, if we want to put in a road, we couldn't have built our well if we had to comply with the de minimis requirements that are in your proposal, because we needed a small exemption to allow us to put the well site where it needed to be to suit the area that we were developing for water. I'm thinking about the interstate at 35 and 97. Some of you may have driven up there. We really need to look at widening those exit ramps. We really need to look at adding maybe a new on-ramp. Guess what, folks? There's a pocket of wetlands right there that's going to impact my community's ability to even put in something as easy as an exit ramp. And frankly, this might be something that the legislature should be concerned about, because that's going to impact all of your state transportation projects. Because I would bet to guess that every time you widen a road, every time that you want to adjust an on-ramp or an exit ramp, you will be impacting wetlands, but they happen to be located next to a freeway or a county road. So they're probably not the quality or the functionality that really serves the goals of Bowser and some of these environmental groups, but there's probably something better out there. And lastly, with regard to stormwater ponding and those other restrictions and that sort of thing. Again, I'd like the LGU to have the flexibility to really look at the functionality of what's being done so that we can create high-quality, high-functioning wetlands for everyone so that we're meeting our needs at the local level of balancing resources but also meeting the more global needs of providing for wetland protection for really all generations, the whole state, for everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Fry. And seeing no other discussion, if next on the list we have Mr. John Waller.
Hey, Mr. Waller, please state your name, who you represent for the record. Go ahead with your testimony. Welcome.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is John Waller. I'm from 14010 Homestead Avenue in Hugo, Minnesota. That's about 17 miles away from here. I represent my family farm and my family's ownership of that farm for the last 50 years. I have served on some Rice Creek Watershed District advisory committees from the 70s, 80s, and again here in the 2000s. And recently I was appointed a manager. But I want to make it very clear, I do not speak for any of those organizations. I'm speaking as an individual citizen here today. Now, I have sent two handouts to you, Mr. Chairman. You'll notice that one of them is a map, and one of them is a timeline. And I wanted to show you that the map on the right is my family farm. And that's the way that the wetland complex to the left of it, if you'll see, Rice Lake, was and has been a type 1, 2, and 3 wetland complex. And now today, it's back to being a type 4 when the Department of Natural Resources bought the property. And the reason it came about from this is because of beaver dams, culverts being out of line, and took us about $2 million of public money over a 10-year period working through the process to get these culverts in. Once we had that wetland restored to that type 1, 2, and 3 complex that you see on the right, then the Department of Natural Resources used the Public Waters Act to dam up the water on a public ditch and flood our farm again. My point about this is that we have a pre-existing drainage property right here, and that we've suffered some damages from this because of the enthusiasm of protecting wetlands for recreational purposes. That there are other purposes here in the state we should consider, such as food, fiber, and fuel productions, and that are in addition to the recreational uses. I brought with me today a couple of pieces of trees that are off that farm. This is a 19-inch piece of tamarack. I'd like to see where you find tamarack that size anywhere in Minnesota. I'll match it with you. That's a pretty nice piece of tree. It was 75 years old when it was killed by the Watershed District and the Department of Natural Resources. A whole forest was around this area like this. Our barns in Hugo, Minnesota are built out of tamarack poles. Some of those barns have been standing there for 75 years. We have a granary on my father's farm built out of tamarack. It's over 100 years old. Not uncommon. This is what the impact of that wetland's interest and enthusiasm for recreational purposes is, and the impact on our fiber. A fellow told me that was a nice crop, and I said, this isn't a prop in my part of the world, it's a crop. And that's how we look at it. But even more so, Mr. Chairman, I want to show you a piece of basswood. This is 32 inches in diameter. Basswood in Minnesota. At this size, 17 miles from here, nice piece of good wood. This tree died when those culverts went too high in order to make that, because of the mismanagement of our public ditch in order for the enthusiasm of recreational use of wetlands and public waters. This tree was alive when Mr. Lincoln was President of the United States. So, committee members, when you go over to the Capitol building, and you look up at the speaker's platform, and you see that big portrait of President Lincoln behind there, you can remember that this tree was alive when Mr. Lincoln was President of the United States. We have trees like that on the farm still, but many of them along the edge of the 22 acres that's been flooded are dead now. So I agree with the previous speakers here, the county commissioner, the engineer, the city council person, as a property owner, and a person who is impacted by these in our agricultural preserve, our farm is an agricultural preserve, that no changes be made in the Wetland Conservation Act until you sit down and take a real close look at what we're going. I think it's unnecessary. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. Questions? There being none, thank you very much for your testimony.
Question,
Representative Reiner.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right, you need to holler.
I would more be interested in Representative Hansen responding to some of the concerns that have been raised by the last speakers in a broad way. I know there's a whole range, but I would expect you to have some general comments about their concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Reiner. The delete all that has been adopted and then the subsequent amendments, when you look at what we've done, it's very similar to Representative Osment's bill with those being taken out. There are a few changes. I was going through those as folks were speaking, but Representative Osment's bill was a result of a stakeholder process where a lot of people were involved a lot of time. Our role here in the legislature is to consider that and to consider other input, and we're doing that, providing the opportunity to be heard. When you look at the changes that exist still in the bill, it's primarily Representative Osment's bill with the stormwater pond issue, a couple of clarifying words relating to the agricultural exemption. I think adding the word fuel in was one of those. There are a few other changes that are in there, and most of those changes, to my knowledge, were the result of the stakeholders working with Mr. Gashke. And the stakeholder that I'm talking about would be Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, talking with Mr. Gashke and other folks during the last few days, trying to find some common ground. I think you've seen that even in the process here in the committee, we've made a number of changes to try to accommodate folks, and I think it's a good bill. I think we've improved it. It has multiple stops to go on it. I think you heard testimony saying there shouldn't be any changes to WAC. And whatever bill we would take today would have changes to WAC. Ours has a few more.
Mr. Chairman, may I answer the question?
We got another question first. Rex Sensfeld.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe it'll be a question that you were going to ask. But my question is, what would the changes that we're making right now have done, or what would they do to the problem that Mr. Waller has with the increased size of Rice Lake? Are we doing anything today in this bill that would be a direct impact on making Rice Lake that big?
Mr. Chair and Representative Scalzi, I've talked to Mr. Waller on a number of occasions over the last year and a half. I think there's some things we agree on and some things we don't. We've got past history here. What we're talking about in the bill is kind of perspective. I think he brings up a good point. He testified in our subcommittee last week. I think some of the issues of when drainage law begins and what that means, we can continue that discussion. In other legislation, we're going to be working with the drainage work group. So I think that continues the discussion on some of these things that look at what the past is. But kind of what we're talking about here is perspective from this point on. I don't know, Mr. Waller.
Mr. Waller, you have a brief comment?
Yes, sir. First of all, I thank Representative Hansen. He's been more than generous with his time in helping us, and so some other committee members that we work with here. This particular bill doesn't do anything that I see that really respects either bill, respects the individual's property right that pre-existed. It's a non-conforming because it pre-exists the 1992 Wetland Conservation Act. It pre-exists the 1955 Watershed District Act. It pre-exists the Public Waters Act of 1937. It pre-exists the 1925 creation of the Conservation Department. Before that, we used to call it the Drainage Department. And we're entitled to have that drainage. And you have to bring that, as a stakeholder, our rights, our property rights to the drainage into the picture. And I don't see any language in either bill that says, please respect those folks' prior rights. If this was last year and we were talking about eminent domain and car lots in Bloomington, well, we'd be out there worried about those folks and how that land was taken from them. But by just changing through administrative procedure and using the Wetland Conservation Act because, or the Public Waters Act, because you want to make a recreational area for the state for a particular purpose for wildlife and impacting other folks' agricultural preserves or their property rights, those things should be recognized in these bills, because without saying them, people forget about it, because that was a century ago that we received that property right. And it hasn't been removed from the legislature, and there's no compensation package in there to really say, look, you're going to get paid for this, or how we're going to go about this. It's just an administrative procedure. Your land gets flooded. Once your land's flooded, you're done. It's not your land anymore. It belongs to the state of Minnesota. And a guy can come along and put a boat in it, row it up there like Representative from Junkie from Wilmer said, off the road, can row right up there on your property and start shooting away.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But getting back to my original question, what in this bill would make your land flood even more? That's what I'm trying to get at. What I can understand the past history, and I really sympathize with you for that. I'm just wondering, what in this bill are you afraid of that would make your land flood even more, because it's already flooded?
Mr. Chairman, I'm afraid of, Madam, I'm afraid that this bill allows, there's some language in there about damming up wetlands and creating that. Those items about particular dams, like that were put on my neighbor's property without any authority, they don't have any easement, any right-of-way to put that on there, they just put it on there. And without that, with that kind of language there, I'm afraid in my past experience that the department would be more than enthusiastic about creating greater wetlands for their recreational program that fit the Type 4 rather than the Type 1, 2, and 3 complex.
Okay, other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Waller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next person on the list is Tom Tree from St. Louis County Public Works.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Tree. I work for St. Louis County Public Works Department in Duluth, Minnesota. And I appreciate the time to talk to you tonight. We're very enthusiastic about the language about greater flexibility of wetland banking that has been included in line item 7. Of that area on line 7, 10 through 7.23, especially the insertion of the comprehensive inventory approved by the board. I've been serving on a committee looking at strategy for wetland mitigation in northeastern Minnesota. 16 counties from Grand Portage to Lake of the Woods County down to Brainerd and over to Moore area. It's one-third of the state and 80% of the state's wetland resources. We have people that we've been working on from Minnesota DNR staff, Minnesota PCA staff, Bowser staff, the Corps of Engineers. MCA has been there, and in various counties to try and come up with a strategy, see what we can do for more wetland opportunity, and to try and find mitigation in our own backyard. The handout I gave you is the result of our strategy, which outlines three things. One is a wetland mitigation opportunity to determine potential opportunity in our area. Estimated cost of that is $225,000. The second thing that we're looking for is a siting strategy that would take the inventory and turn it into practical wetland mitigation. And that cost is $175,000. And then the third thing that we were trying to do is develop what mitigation guidelines that would help us align mitigation credits between the state and federal systems. We have a little bit of a disparity between federal rules and state rules. And the bill that's presented by Representative Hansen tries to take care of that, but we still have some problems yet to work out. And so we hope that you would at least take this under consideration. And it would greatly help Bowser help us replace wetlands in Minnesota, not part of the state.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Tree? Thank you very much for coming down. Ms. Burnett.
Mr. Chair, while the next testifier is coming up, Mr. Tree and others have spoke to our wetland subcommittee and could work with Representative Dill on trying to address some of those issues that they've raised. So.
Okay. Ms. Burnett. Welcome.
Chairman, committee members, thank you. My name is Lisa Frenette, and I'm with the Builders Association of Minnesota. We just have three concerns that we'd like to address real briefly. We're hoping we'll be able to work with the stakeholders on this process as it moves through the committee process. The first is under the deadline for response under 15.99, Section 1. We believe under lines 1.21 that whether an applicant is present at a hearing or not, they should be allowed to receive the denial in writing. The second is under lines 2, page 2, line 23, subdivision, it would be subdivision 3. While we acknowledge wetland delineation, we feel that there should be a narrower fix, and again, we'd like to work with the stakeholders on making this a little bit easier. And then page 4, line 12, regarding the stormwater ponds, I know that a few people have responded to this already, but we'd like to make sure that there's no disincentive for our builders to continue to go beyond just building a concrete pond, that they continue to add on and make them progressive secondary or tertiary ponds. Thank you very much, and we hope to work with the stakeholders again.
Thank you. Are there any questions or any discussion? Representative Osmond.
Chair, I have an amendment to address a couple of the concerns that were just raised. I'll get a copy of
it. Okay, Representative Osmond has an oral amendment, and it is a delete all amendment.
Oh, it's to the delete all.
Oh, to the delete all amendment. Yeah. I think it's. I think that would be an awfully long oral amendment, but the amendment is coded A07-03. Oh, that is the delete all. Okay, so the amendment applies to page 1, line 1.21. After applicant, insert requests a written statement of the reasons for denial or. And Representative Osmond, if you want to speak to the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to speak to the amendment. It's kind of the reason for the provision in the bill is because we've had situations where people were present at meetings where denials were given, and then they came back 60 days or 61 days later and said, give me my permit because you didn't give me the no in writing, even though they stood there and they witnessed the entire process. That's for the original change. Well, in making that original change, we then maybe close it up a little bit too tight, and a person might not be able to get a written denial or written statement if they requested it, so we'd like to make that clear. These are common sense provisions. Unfortunately, letter of the law gets things so tight, we have to put this type of advice in the statute also. That's the reason for it, and the author, I think, supports the amendment.
I support the amendment and encourage its adoption.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. And Representative Osmond.
Here I have a second oral amendment. It's my understanding that there was a typo on page 2 on line 2.24, and the second or should be of. And I don't know all the ramifications of that change, but I believe there are people here that can speak to it. If the committee would like to know what the difference of changing an or to an of makes, or
welcome, Ms. Dammer.
Thank you, Chairman, Representative Osmond. Again, Jeanette Bloomer at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. This was just drawn to our attention by some of the agricultural stakeholders that are a little bit concerned that, well, if I'm even thinking about doing something on my property, I might need to make a determination of whether I'm exempt or not, and somehow I'd get snagged into this 60-day rule or something. And we said, no. The intent is if there's an official certification of your exempt status, that that's what was meant, and that really just needs that or change to an of to carry out the intent.
Okay. Right. Thank you, Ms. Dammer. Any other discussion on that? Hearing none, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hansen will renew his motion that House File 1343, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Next, Representative Hansen, you're up again. We have House File 1930. So, Representative Hansen, if you would want to move the bill.
I would like to move House File 1930.
Representative Hansen moves House File 1930 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs. Representative Hansen to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is in response to the Legislative Auditor's Report. We've worked with the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and they've worked with various local units of government to develop a response, and I have Mr. Jaskie here again to go through the bill.
Mr. Jaskie, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members, again. As Representative Hansen indicated, this proposed legislation is responsive to the Legislative Auditor's Report on Watershed Management that was released in late January. This bill addresses four of the key findings in that report. Number one, that oversight of local water management activities is too important a matter to be only discretionary in terms of a function of the state, that this should be something that is systematic, it should be standardized and constructive. Number two, that the approach that the state would take in providing this oversight would be flexible enough to acknowledge the local differences and to understand that each part of our state has unique water resource issues, and we want to make sure we don't standardize to the point of becoming incompatible with those local unique features. The third point is that if oversight is done and reveals some problems, that there should be authorities to impose proportionate consequences to assure that the wise use of our state resources and state funding are met. And finally, in order to do state oversight, that would require funding and resources to do that work. And it would be dependent on the number of both governments we'd be overseeing, as well as the frequency of the oversight, as well as the depth or thoroughness of that undertaking. And so with that introduction, I'll go through the pieces of the legislation. The first subdivision just provides the findings that, accountability and oversight for local water management are an important endeavor that the state should be undertaking. The second subdivision addresses the definition of what those local water management entities are, and it specifically describes watershed districts, soil and water conservation districts, metropolitan water management organizations that are in place in the Seven County metropolitan area, and counties who are responsible for water management of certain programs. And this would apply if they're operating either separately or jointly, because some organizations do conjoin their activities to manage water resources on in a joint powers authority. And this would apply to these provisions of existing statute 103B, 103C, 103D, 103G, and Chapter 114D, which is the recently passed Clean Water Legacy Act. The next subdivision requires that Bowser establish performance standards for the oversight activity, and that we would do so via rulemaking potentially, but not right away. We want to set something up and get it going, and if it turns out that rules are in fact a way that needs to be this needs to be handled that way, we would undertake rulemaking at some point in the future, but not until after January of 2010. And subdivision 4 describes how that evaluation would be conducted. We would look at the financials and the other performance activities of the organization, and the frequency would be once every 5 years at minimum. And I'll talk a little bit more about how often we might be able to do that oversight, depending on the finances that come with this legislation potentially. We would then also maintain the information that was gleaned in the oversight by posting that information on our website. Transparency was one of the other points that was brought forward in that report, saying that they wanted to provide access for citizens and others to participate in those local water management decision-making opportunities. Then we would report that same information to this committee and a similar committee in the Senate every 2 years. And then the corrective actions piece is the piece that provides Bowser with the authority to either reduce, withhold, or redirect grants or other funding if we don't have deficiencies corrected within a year from the date of a notice. So that's the consequence to an organization not being able to bring themselves up to a standard that is deemed adequate. And the second provision under corrective actions really has to do with the ability to defer for up to 1 year a decision about a petition for termination for either a soil and water conservation district or a watershed district, so that if an evaluation has not been done or if one has been done that needs to be updated, that can be done and accomplished and then communicated to those who would be interested in that petition and the results of the assessment. And then finally, the appropriation language here is put together based on our estimate of a mid-level of assessment that we would do on average of every 3 years across approximately 240 or 50 local government units at a level that would be sort of a mid-level assessment, which we would involve looking at their plans, looking at their organizational competencies, and not going a lot further than that, but making sure that the plans that they've developed and have had public participation in and our agency has approved are in fact being followed, and if not being followed, that they're being amended to reflect new priorities. So these estimates for the corporation, I'm sure, will be discussed in another committee, but that's our best estimate. With that, I'll stand for any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Director Jasky. Any questions or comments? Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Director Jasky, as you're describing this process and you're anticipating what may come out of a rulemaking process, you still, I've always visioned or view your board as an implementing agency to implement and to really provide assistance in getting things done on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to see you get into a regulatory type of mode where people would perceive that you're somehow the cop arriving penalize them in some way. Although fiduciary responsibility with regard to grants and so forth is something that is a public responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You feel confident you'll be able to make that balance where you'll be able to maintain your implementation status out there and the good cooperative effort that you have with local governments and yet give us the accountability that we're looking for?
Chairman, Representative Osment, I believe so, and I know our local governments feel exactly the same way, that they want to be accountable. They want to be able to show that they are using the resources the state provides and their own resources effectively. And so we believe that, again, as I mentioned earlier, that one of the approaches we would take is that this be a constructive endeavor as long as possible, and if there are uncorrected deficiencies, then we have to look at another approach, and that's where the funding and the fiduciary elements may factor in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the work that's gone into that. I was going to have the same question, but in the evaluation and report section, I guess one thing that can be seen in other agencies sometimes is when we say we'll show performance, it can mean a lot of different things. And I guess I would just suggest that you focus not just on whether reports got turned in, but whether the outcomes have been achieved. But I wouldn't prescribe that in legislation, but now we've seen agencies that can crank out the stuff that's on their checklist, but it doesn't necessarily mean that anything's improved.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Representative Gardner, I think one of the things that we've started from the get-go is that we have to be preemptive, that we can't just wait for reports to come in and hope that we check the box that they've arrived and not really understand clearly what the details are, because we need to go look for any problems, if in fact there are any, before they're revealed. That's one of our principles that we've been operating from, so I appreciate that comment.
Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, any further comments, Representative Hansen?
No, this is an agency bill, and I think it actually looks at kind of coaching, and then if there's coaching doesn't work, then there's consequence. I encourage support.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, I will renew Representative Hansen's motion that House File 1930 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Thank you. And we're going through the Game, Fish, and Forestry Division report on the Game and Fish Bill. And Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will move... What are we doing with the bill? We'll move the
adoption of the division report first, and then we'll move the bill.
All right. We'll move the adoption of the division report, Game and Fish.
Representative Dill moves the adoption of the division report for House File 1116. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. And Representative Dill, if you want to move the bill.
Are we moving it to finance?
This is going to finance.
Motion we recommended to pass and move to the Committee on Finance, further referred to Environment Finance. Is there another ending to that?
Yeah, made a mistake. Actually, it will be referred to the Committee on Government Operations first.
Then re-referred to Government Operations will be my motion. Do you get that? Everybody understand the motion?
Now, I'll repeat it. Representative Dill moves that House File 1116, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations, Reform, Technology, and Elections. All those in favor, we're going to discuss the bill first. I did this once before.
thank you, Mr. Chair, members, Chair Egan. First off, the Game Fish Bill, every year we have a Game and Fish Bill. It's my privilege now to chair that committee, as many of you know. I just wanted to tell you that the bill that is before you, of course, starts with provisions that are the department's provisions, which if we have any questions on those provisions, the department is here and ready to explain them. Then we have bills that we have incorporated by many authors that are also contained within the bill. They are, as the scoreboard at the moment is, 8 DFL bills and 8 GOP bills. I'll just quickly run through those. And the first House file was House File 260 regarding veterans exempted from range requirements for safety certificates. That's a Kalin bill, but it was also Hawes and Severson that were in conjunction on that bill. So that was kind of a three-way bill. Then there is a provision by Representative Pawlowski, House File 128, which takes the non-resident fee for archery, which was, I believe, $137, and makes it the same fee as a resident fee. And that is no longer a retaliatory type provision. Also, the DNR had that in their bill as well, and even goes even further than that with some other licensing provisions. Then we have a bill by an item that was included in the bill regarding some cartridge sizes by Representative Rukavina. We checked with the department, and they're adequate with adding those cartridges. Then we have a Hackbarth amendment a bill, House File 197, regarding trapping lifetime licenses, which provides for if you buy a lifetime license, a sportsman's license, you can add, the trapping will be added to it, and it goes back to the origination date of the first trapping, or the first licenses that we issued as lifetime. The next item is a Cornish provision. I have to commend him on starting to think like a constituent in this particular provision, and having a that's an inside joke. Having a remote-controlled noiseless collars for the taking of game, which I think is fox and coyote. Right now, there's a wire that you have to have it wired between the controller and the noisemaker, and this just removes the wire. There is some Lake Superior commercial fishing provisions, a bill of mine, a Simpson bill, the House File 960, regarding non-resident deer hunting licenses. So a grandpa that lives in Minnesota could have their grandson or granddaughter come from another state, and they would be able to buy a license for the same fee as a Minnesota youth under the Simpson provision. And then there's also a provision that studies the lengthening. This is a bill of mine, House File 1228. It studies the length of the lake trout season in Minnesota and proposes to have evaluated extending the season 2 weeks to match the season that's in the boundary waters. There is a House File 32. Representative Hackbarth has an outdoor walk-in access program that can be done voluntarily by the landowner for hunting and fishing. Representative Otremba has House File 1211, which was allowing smokeless gunpowder in muzzleloaders. Representative Hoppe, in his House File 1539, allows for the bow weight draw pull to be reduced from 40 to 30. Representative Doty has a permissive language for the department on the spearing of suckers, allowing them to adjust the dates in different areas of the state as they may see fit. It's a permissive language only. And that has to do with the fact that with the warmer climates that we're experiencing, some of the people feel they're missing the sucker season. Representative McNamara has House File 1749, which is adding an additional rooster pheasant to the bag limit after, I believe it's 2 weeks after the opening date of the season. That's biologically sustainable, according to the department. Then there were amendments. The Hackbarth amendment removed the additional license for a dark house, so that means that you would just have to buy a fishing license now, where presently you would have to buy a fishing license, and then if you were going to spear from a dark house, you would have to buy a dark house license. Also an amendment that moves the shotgun rifle restriction boundary in north in Clay County, which was supported. That was a Hackbarth or Lanning amendment, supported Alt Lanning and Representative Marquardt. It was done by Representative Hackbarth for them on their behalf. They spoke to me. They were in favor of that. And then Representative Hansen has an amendment that requires reporting of taking of Asian carp and other bullhead carp. All of the threatening carp that that Representative Osment has told us about over the years. I can't remember all the names. And then also a $100 civil penalty, which would not go on your permanent record like a misdemeanor or petty misdemeanor, for not reporting the taking of a non-white-tailed deer. And it also removes the residency requirement for free antlers permits for property owners. Now, I just have to mention, members, that in all of the bills that the 16 provisions that I mentioned that are contained within the bill, there are several that have money involved. The first one is the Pulaski deer hunting license modification for non-residents. That has approximately a $70,000 negative note. The Hackbarth Amendment adding lifetime trapping has about a $2,500 negative note. The Simpson bill on the deer hunting licenses for non-residents at the same rate, youth non-residents at the same rate as a resident youth, has about a $43,000 note. We do not know at this present time what House File 32, the outdoor walk-in program, has for a note. We expect that it will have a cost. And we do have an estimate, although it's not a real tight estimate, by removing the spearing license and allowing them to take do spearing under just an angling license, is estimated to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000 in lost revenue. So the reason I bring those up is because as this bill travels into Environment Finance, I expect that Representative Wagenius will be looking at this very closely and figuring out what we can and cannot do of those bills. So I just wanted to bring to the committee's attention that we had those bills that we believe have all negative fiscal notes in terms of the Environment Finance bill. With that, if you have any questions about the bill as presented, this particular engrossment, I will try to answer them. I tried to give a brief description of each bill, and we also have Mr. Bogus here. We have someone here from enforcement, from the department, and we are ready to answer any questions that you may or may not have. We did mark this bill up, put this bill together last night in committee. We spent a lot of time on the bill and discussing the different provisions in the bill, and I really feel that we have the makings of a good document here. So your questions.
Thank you, Representative Bill. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you for noting all the fiscal implications. I hope the governor was listening very carefully.
I've got him on remote control in my cell phone right here.
Okay, good. I'm looking on page 2, establishing fees, line 2.10, for commercial uses. Help me out with what commercial uses you are envisioning here.
Mr. Bogus, can you come forward? Sure, that is a department provision, so I'll have Mr. Bogus discuss that.
Bogus, if you could state your name, please.
Mr. Chair and members, Ed Bogus, Deputy Director of Fish and Wildlife for DNR. Section 3 of the current engrossment refers to some. We used to charge fees for things like dog trials or minnow trapping permits and things like that on wildlife areas. As we have been going through a lot of our authorities for the last few years, we discovered we don't have clear authority to charge fees for those types of activities on wildlife management areas or aquatic management areas. So that's the reason that we're seeking this authority, so that the type of commercial use, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I think the only one that comes to mind as an example would be for minnow trapping.
Okay. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chair, Mr. Bogus, I understand the dog trials. I understand the special events. But commercial uses can encompass just about anything on this earth. I understand minnow trapping permits, but it does seem that this is a very broad broad word, and gives the commissioner immense authority. It seems a little safer to use a more limited word than any commercial use or commercial use.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, I agree that is a pretty broad term, particularly since we only had a limited use in mind, and Representative Dill suggesting that we can work on some language to make that a little more narrow and a little more specific to what we're thinking about.
Chair.
Representative Dale.
Well, Representative Guineas, we'll have that amendment when we get to your committee, if not before.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing it to our attention.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think this probably is also a department provision. It's actually Section 1. I didn't get very far in the bill. I'm wondering that... First, just out of curiosity, the need for this definition, and then how it would impact potentially on some of the tournaments where they, and I'm sure you've taken all that into consideration. I just wanted to get a better understanding of it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, this is intended merely to clarify. These are terms immediately released or immediately returned to the water, terms that have been used in law and rule for many years and in many places, but we've never defined those terms. And our previous Commissioner Merriam was concerned about the plain meaning of the term implied that a person could not weigh the fish, measure the fish, take a photograph of the fish, and really encouraged us to come up with some definitions of what's allowable and still qualifies for immediate release. I don't have the rule right in front of me, but last night I quoted probably the most relevant section of rule that we have, and I could put my hands on it quickly here, but it... We've had a rule for a long time that once you have your limit of fish in possession, and we've considered that to be in a live well, on a stringer, or whatever, you can no longer sort or cull from your limit. Prior to having your limit, you can do some switching. If you catch a bigger fish, you can release a smaller fish. But once you have your limit, you can no longer keep fishing. And that's been a long-standing rule. And we've said that if you don't immediately release the fish, and that includes after you've admired it and weighed it and photographed it, if you then put it in a live well and you've reached your limit, you're done for that day. And this is just clarifying the immediately released or immediately returned to the water language that's been in that rule for many years. So now we are hearing from some of the tournament anglers that didn't understand that they could no longer do that because it sounds like they've been doing that, but that's been illegal for years.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dale.
Representative Osmond. I asked that. That leaped off of me. I mean, it leaped out at me before I got my first email. And then I started to get the email, and I have absolutely no intention of harming the tournament industry. And so, except that someone can show me to the contrary that it does, I'd like for the provision to stay, but in the interim, but while we're moving, even amend on the House floor, if somebody can show me that it's a provision that harms the tournament industry, as some people have emailed me and called me and said, I'm going to take it out because I don't want to harm them, or at least find some compromise language so that it will not do that. So I share your concern. The department has assured me that this is not anything to do with tournament fishing, except that there could be some people that have that misunderstanding about how that culling can actually work when you're tournament fishing, you're using a live well. So unless you have further questions, that's my intent on that provision.
Okay. Any further comments? There are two amendments, and I would like to first move Amendment H1116A2. And people are taking out the amendment. This amendment, what it does is it allows artificial lights to be used in lures for spearing as well as for angling. It is already allowed for angling. It was brought to me by some constituents who are spearing and spear fishermen, and they believe that it should be the same for spearing as it is for angling. A lot more fish are taken by angling than by spearing, so it seemed to be a reasonable request to me, and it would be on the lures again is where these lights would be used. So any Representative Dill?
Well, as I understand the amendment, where I'm just quickly looking at, because I actually had a different amendment on that. Right now you can have a light on the end of a fishing lure and on the end of a line, cast it out and use it. What you're saying is that in the dark house, for example, you could put a light on the decoy. Now, the decoy doesn't have any hooks. I don't know if that's law or not. but you could put a light on the decoy, drop it down, and then spear a fish when it came into the into your view.
That is correct.
Okay. I don't have any problem with the amendment myself.
Any Representative Wagenius?
When I see the word lights, a couple things just come up in mind. I mean, decoys can get lost in the water. Are there any issues here with either lead or mercury in the decoys?
Representative Wagenius, that's a good question, and there isn't. I know that the lights that are being used do not have those components in it. And they are allowed in North Dakota. They are currently allowed these types of lights for angling. No, that should not be a problem at all. Just Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, just checking to be sure, this is the Chair's amendment.
That is correct.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Dale.
Current law on line 1.11 talks about any battery that is used in lighting fishing lures cannot obtain any intentionally introduced mercury. That's the current law as it stands today.
Yes, and it does not change that. So thank you, Representative Dale. Any other questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of Amendment 1116A2 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Amendment, motion prevails, amendment is adopted. Next amendment, Representative Tao.
Mr. Chair, that's my amendment, the AO70298. I'm establishing a crossbow hunting season. Before we go to that, I'd like to make an oral amendment on line 1.7, strike 31 and insert 15. Essentially, the crossbow season will more or less correspond with the firearm and muzzle loader season. And then there's a piece down here that talks about this expiring in 2009, so essentially gives two years to test this out. And towards the end, we're going to ask the commissioner of the DNR to come back and make a report on whether there was, you know, there was some concern about poaching, increasing poaching and stuff. They're going to come back and make a report whether there was an increase in poaching during the crossbow season. I think this is a good amendment. There was a survey done by the North American Hunting Club. They sent out to all of their members across the country, and over 60% of them support allowing anyone to use a crossbow during the hunting season. So there is support out there, but as many of you guys know, you have received a lot of emails on the crossbow, and it has changed a lot since then. So this has, it's not part of the archery season anymore. It's strictly in the gun season, so I appreciate your support. If there are any concerns, I'll try to address that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dale.
Well, I'd like to speak to the amendment. First off, Representative Tao has started this process, and he has moved an incredible distance. As the chair of the committee that first heard this bill yesterday, I received a lot of email about House File 1241, probably more than any other bill so far this year. And each and every one of those email had to do with the archery, of redefining bow and arrow archery type things to include crossbows. None of them had anything to do with any gun season or muzzleloader season. I didn't even hear from anyone on that issue. Now maybe some other members did. Secondly, is that one thing that Representative Tao did not say was is that this creates a muzzle. He did say it creates a muzzle. A crossbow season, but also that the commissioner is to charge a license for the crossbow license. And that should be a revenue producer for the Game and Fish Fund as well. It does have a sunset. at the end of the 2 years, and he has asked for a report back so that we address some of our resident CO's concerns about poaching. And so, I mean, I think we've come a long way. I'm supporting the amendment.
Okay. Any other discussion on the amendment?
Here.
Oh, Representative Cornish.
I opposed this last night. It was defeated. I think there was more votes on the other side than there was ours. Whether you've come a long distance, I don't know or not. The problems I see with it is people were here voting against it last night. They were here testifying against it. Now the people aren't back here to testify against it. Their voice isn't heard, and now we pass it. And the amendment at the last minute is kind of hard to swallow. But Representative Tao, would you be interested in an amendment on line 1.7 after the word crossbow? I don't know whether you'd introduce a comma or not, Council could tell us, but put during the regular firearms or muzzleloader deer season, just for clarification. I know you had said that. And okay. Then, and just considering this, on another one in the crossbow season report, on Council's advice, just put something in there about or any problems encountered, something to that language, because poaching wasn't a big thing with me. It was mentioned, but mine came from more of an ethical thing and crowding and having to wear fluorescent orange and a number of other problems. And so if Council could think of anything, that would be my two suggestions as an amendment. So I would offer an amendment on 1.7 after the crossbow, put a comma, put during a regular firearms or muzzleloader deer season. And then I wouldn't change the December 15th with Representative Tao brought up. And then could Council suggest something for Section 48 or any other problems encountered, something to do with that? Would that be acceptable to the youth?
The Chair of Members.
Representative Tao.
Yeah, that was the intention. And if you add those language to the 1.7 line there, I have no problem. So there's no...
Mr. Chair.
I have no problem with that. I would accept that those amendments.
And then if there wasn't any objection, create another Section 49 that says if crossbows are ever entered the archery season, the site would be revoked for life from any hunting license.
Mr. Chair.
So move. No, Representative Dill.
Well, I have a question. If Representative Powell certainly has the ability to accept these amendments, and I don't really see a problem with the amendments, is that going to make Cornish vote for the bill?
Representative Cornish,
yes.
A technical provision that's missing from this bill that I advised Representative Tao about earlier outside that we're going to have to take care of between now and Representative Wagenius's committee is a section that allows the commissioner to create the license. Is that right, Mr. Boggs? I see that that's lacking in here. We'll just have to fix it then.
Okay.
But, I mean, I did want to get it on the record that I saw that right away. And I told that to Representative Tao.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Dale. And as far as the second part of your amendment, Representative Cornish, in Section 48, you wanted some language added.
Mr. Chairman and members, on line 1.17, Council has suggested after the word poaching, put a comma, or other hunting problems. During the time of a crossbow deer season. So between poaching and during, I don't know if there's a comma or not. No comma, just or other hunting problems, no comma, between poaching and during.
Okay. Any further comments or questions on the amendment, to the amendment? Yes, Representative Cornish.
And I don't know how many of us will be around here how long, but if we could just keep this in our memory banks. I know it doesn't commit anybody, but in other states where crossbows are started out, usually it starts out with the disabled group, then it gets put into regular firearm season, and eventually into archery season. And my main complaint was to leave archery season to archery and crossbows to crossbows. And so I guess we'll just have to see what happens in the future. But if anybody ever archives these tapes, they'll at least know I was against it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments?
Regarding that particular that aspect of this thing, based on the number of emails that I received, and they were copious, I will also go on the tape and say that I, at this point, I couldn't imagine trying to overcome the archery community and put it in the archery season.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Seeing none, I will renew Representative Cornish's motion that, well, and I don't know if I need to repeat the amendment. Everybody knows the amendment. So all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
I renew my, unless there's further questions, Mr. Chair, I renew, no. Renew the motion.
Representative Hackbarth has
a question. Vote on the amendment?
No.
To the amendment?
Oh.
The amendment.
Oh, yeah.
And we still have to vote on the amendment.
Yeah, I renew my motion.
Okay. Representative Tsai renews his motion to pass Amendment A070298. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. And Representative Dill.
Unless there's further questions, I'd like to renew my motion on the file bill as amended.
Representative Dill renews his motion at House File 1116, first committee engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Government Operations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Next, last bill on the agenda today, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I move to take House File 1016 as amended from the table.
What is this?
Representative Hansen moves... House File 1016, First Committee Engrossment. Is that the right one? Yeah. Be taken from the table. Representative Hansen to the bill.
Do we have to vote on taking it from the table?
Oh, I guess we do have to vote on taking it off the table. So all those in favor of taking House File 1016 off the table signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is before us. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I believe where we left this, Representative Hackbarth had an amendment to the bill. Since that time, he and I have met, Representative McNamara, Representative Moe have met, and you have in front of you 1016A2. I'm not sure on the procedure if the amendment that was offered before we laid on the table is still there, or if I can move 1016A2.
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, I believe, if I'm right, I think my amendment might be before us, and it might be appropriate for me to... Is your amendment amending my amendment, or is it... I apologize, I don't have it right in front of me. Representative Hansen, is it an amendment to my amendment?
Yeah, I believe we adopted your amendment, and so then we were on... And so the A2 amends your amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, but weren't we having a discussion with Representative Moe about deleting the word county? And did we
We didn't do anything.
We ended up adopting it. I'm sorry, Mr. Chip. Boy, I am getting old. I don't remember this stuff. I think you're right, Representative Hansen. We did adopt it, and then we had further discussion.
And I apologize. The copies are up here of the A2 amendment that I'm talking about. If folks do not have that.
Yes.
Okay. The amendments...
I don't know.
Everybody, should we wait till everybody gets a copy? Is there any discussion on the amendment before?
Mr. Chair.
Okay, we'll let people get copies.
I could discuss the amendment as I was, and I don't want to speak for Representative Moe, but Representative Hansen probably wouldn't be appropriate for me to be speaking for him, Representative Hansen, but I believe, Representative Hansen, that we have, this was at Representative Moe's, and it was actually an amendment brought forward by the Department of Ag, the idea of using the mileage which seemed to work real good for Representative Moe, and Representative Moe asked to be a change from 50 to 100, and basically what we're doing is deleting the word county and putting in a mileage distance that works so that folks that are only working in the local area, which Representative Moe mostly was concerned about, would still be able to move that wood without additional restrictions on them. But then if the need came up later, when they would be able to be identified, and Representative Moe seemed to be very amenable to the situation. And so I think all the parties, and I believe Representative Hackbart, we've addressed his concerns, I believe, now also. I don't know if Representative Moe got a chance to talk to Representative Solberg yet or not, but I believe Representative Solberg's concerns were of a local nature also.
Representative Hansen, any?
I would move A2 if that's the proper for.
Yes. And everybody's got a copy?
No.
No?
Is anyone?
Okay. I think copies are coming, so. Are there?
No, that was from the previous bill.
There were multiple copies up here, but
everybody's got an A2, but it's the previous bill.
He doesn't have them.
Well, you know, Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I don't think any of us do, but if I'm not mistaken, it's very short. I believe you could read it to us and make sure that Mr. Helen has one. If I'm not mistaken, it's quite short. If we were to work off of the existing one we have.
Okay. Representative Hansen, if you'd like to read the amendment.
The amendment moves to amend House File 1016 by on page and line. It doesn't have the number on it because it's to the committee engrossment. It takes out county or, and before state boundaries says or more than 100 miles from its origin. So it's taking out the county and putting in more than 100 miles from its origin. And then we took out the page and line, delete a petty misdemeanor penalty, and insert confiscation and $100 penalty. A firewood dealer shall be subject to confiscation and assessed $100 penalty for each sale of firewood not approved under the provisions of this section and sold for use on land administered by the commissioner. So we took a $100 penalty similar to the game and fish bill that we just adopted. We needed to correct that anyway because the way that the bill had been drafted, it did not have confiscation and the penalty. And then we're making a distinction between, say, someone who's bringing firewood on and there's a violation versus a dealer who may be making sales. And again, I apologize to the committee that he didn't have copies for this. I thought
go,
they were.
Go paperless, man.
any discussion or questions on the amendment? Where did it go to? Okay. Is everybody comfortable taking a vote on the amendment now, or?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, it's non-controversial. Representative Hansen and I have worked out our differences. I think he's done a good job of coming to a compromise.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Amendment is passed. So, Representative Hansen to the bill as amended.
I renew my motion to pass House File 1016 as amended, and it goes to
Government Operations.
To Government Operations.
Yes. Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 1016, First Committee Engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All those in favor? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Osmond.
Just trying to make sure that this was a maximum amendment that we already adopted.
I was just trying to, Mr. Chair, just trying to verify us that Representative McNamara's amendment had become part of the bill, and it's already great.
Okay. Any further discussion at all? No problem. Any further discussion? That, Representative Hansen renews his motion All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed. And that is the last bill for the day. So we are adjourned.